I don't know if you've ever been to another country or another culture and not quite known what the etiquette was, and maybe you've made a faux pas. Now, I am very good at doing this. I have family who live in Italy, and they have a custom of kissing lots in Italy when you go to Italy, and similarly in France, although I gather it's slightly different in France. But you, in Italy, you kiss on both cheeks, you know, once you get over that slight discomfort as an Englishman, it should be okay. But the problem is that I never know which way to start. And I have this little moment of anxiety every time I meet any of Catherine's family or anyone in Italy. It turns out you don't really need to know them to kiss them. So I have this little anxiety moment where I think, okay, which way should I go? Maybe I'll let them lead. And then I get to it and I just think, get it over and done with. And I go straight in and they go the opposite way. And several times we've met in the middle. And it gets increasingly uncomfortable. But, you know, there are different etiquettes, aren't there, in different cultures. Apparently, in certain parts of the Middle East, what we would say, you know, often an English person, when they don't know the language, they use gestures, don't they? So they're going, hi, good to meet you. But apparently that is equivalent to sticking up your middle finger. So another faux pas there. The other faux pas might be if you are in certain parts of Asia and possibly other cultures too, that they eat with their right hand and they do something quite different with their left hand. And so you don't go and shake hands with your left hand. So if you're left-handed, watch out. But, you know, we easily make faux pas, don't we, when we go into another culture. And this story is basically Jesus making a big faux pas. He's going into a different culture. I'd like us to just watch a short video, which is just because it's slightly more interesting than just me reading. So let's watch this video, which is the story.
Jesus and his friends were near the Samaritan village Sychar. His disciples went into the village to buy lunch, while Jesus rested by a well, tired after the long walk. Soon a Samaritan woman came towards the well to draw water. "Would you give me a drink of water?" Jesus asked the woman. The woman was shocked and responded, "How can you, a Jewish man, ask a Samaritan woman for a drink?" She asked this because Jews in those days wouldn't be caught dead talking to Samaritans, especially a woman. But Jesus replied, "If you knew the generosity of God and who I am, you would be asking me for a drink, and I would give you fresh, living water." "Sir," exclaimed the woman, "give me some of that." At that point, Jesus asked her to go and bring her husband back. He knew that she'd lived with many men and that she didn't have a husband. Realizing that Jesus was a prophet, the woman quickly changed the subject and asked him a difficult question about where people should worship God. Jesus responded to her, "It's not going to be about rules and places anymore. God is now looking for people who will worship him from their heart authentically. I know that the Messiah, the foretold rescuer, will come and explain all this to us," the woman added. Jesus said, "The Messiah is me. Your wait is over."
It's a good story. For those that might not be fully aware of what a Samaritan was, and we hear about Samaritans a couple of times in the stories about Jesus, and Samaritans were like half Jews, and they were Jews who at one point in history had started marrying people who weren't Jews, and so the Jews despised them and thought they weren't worth even talking to. And so this is a big faux pas of Jesus to even go and talk to a Samaritan, let alone a Samaritan woman. And he was breaking all sorts of social, cultural expectations by sitting at this well and talking to this woman who was a Samaritan. And the fact is, Jesus didn't care about these social expectations. He had gone on a route that he knew would take him towards this Samaritan village. And he sat down at this well, and I believe that he was doing the will of God. And he had heard God speak to him and lead him to wait there. And I believe that this is a divine appointment. This is not just a coincidence. And so he's sitting there, and he's breaking all sorts of barriers, expectations, and he looks this lady in the face. He doesn't remove himself from the situation, and he looks her in the eyes, and he tells her that she's a somebody, that she's no longer a nobody, and that he wants to involve her in his kingdom plans. And to God, a nobody is a somebody. God looks at you in the eye. If you feel like you're insignificant, maybe you feel like you don't belong, maybe you feel like you have nothing to offer, maybe you feel like you are a failure. And if you've ever felt like that, just remember that Jesus sits and waits and wants to look you in the face and say, you are a somebody to me. And this is such a radical moment that I think we can't quite grasp it, because we're not living in that culture. But I just want to look a little bit about why it's radical and why this was such a significant encounter. So we've mentioned that she was a Samaritan. We've mentioned that she was a woman. And at that time, for a man to spend time with a woman was not the good thing. And so, so those two things alone, are faux pas. The third thing, which we heard about, didn't we, in the story, is that she'd had lots of husbands. And, I want to just spend a little moment looking at this, because, I think at some point along the way, we've jumped to some conclusions, perhaps, but there are a couple of different interpretations of this bit of the story. This Samaritan woman that had had five husbands, and the man that she was now living with was not even her husband. And so I want to read what Jesus says, and I'm going to read it in two different ways. And these are two valid interpretations of this passage. And then I want to just share which one I find more persuasive and the one I'm more convinced by. So I'm going to read from, in fact, I meant to bring a Bible up with me and I forgot. Could someone just turn to page 1066? And you might all want to do this just so you can tell make sure I'm not making it up. 1066, that's 1066. It should be John chapter 4. Thank you, Joe. So we are reading. I've got one. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, though. So we're reading, where was it? Yeah, verse 16. And Jesus says to her, go call your husband and come back. Okay, so this is interpretation number one. I have no husband, she replied. Jesus said to her, you are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not even your husband. What you have said is quite true. That's my best impression of a cross Jesus. I have no idea what he might have sounded like, but this is the second interpretation. So this is another way that he could have said this. So I have no husband, says the lady. Jesus said to her, you are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true. So you can hear that his response could have been completely different, depending on what the story was. And a lot of people have interpreted this as the lady being a bit of a promiscuous woman. So Jesus knew her story. Lots of people have jumped to the conclusion that she has had five husbands because she's been looking for love in relationships, and each, maybe she's had an affair, and so she's had 5 husbands because she's been unfaithful, and she's led a life of sin. And we have to remember what time of the day Jesus is meeting her. So he's encountering her in the middle of the day. It says at noon. Now this would have been the hottest point of the day, and most women wouldn't have come out in the middle of the day. If you just imagine, it would have been quite a walk. She'd have had to have carried water with her. And you don't want to do that in the middle of the day. And so there must have been a reason why she was doing it in the middle of the day and not at the beginning or the end of the day. Now, was it because she was ostracized because she was immoral? Because she had led an immoral lifestyle and made bad choices? So that would have led to Jesus being legitimately convicting, maybe a little bit challenging to her in the way he spoke to her. So that's interpretation number one. The other story, which I'm going to say now I'm more convinced by, is that she had had 5 husbands who died or had left her. They'd been the ones that had been unfaithful. And her experience, her story, her narrative has been one of grief and loss. And I'll leave you to wonder as to why she might have gone in the middle of the day. That's slightly unclear still. But maybe it's because she's living with someone who's not her husband now. I don't know. But the thing we've got to realize, and I did a bit of reading about into the culture of that time. So what would it have been like when you were living at that time as a Samaritan or as a Jew? The reality is that it would have been very difficult for a woman who had had an affair, who had instigated the end of the marriage, to have got married again. Most men wouldn't have gone near her. And I want to draw your attention to another story in the Bible, which is where Jesus is confronted by a lady who's been caught in adultery. She's been caught being unfaithful. Now, I don't know if you know that story, but for those that don't, the people that are caught her are saying she needs to be stoned according to the law, according to the interpretation of the Jewish law. This lady, because she'd been caught in adultery, was going to be stoned. That's how serious it was. Okay. So maybe this Samaritan lady's been really lucky 5 times to escape being stoned. But the reality is as well, in that story of Jesus coming up to and encountering the woman who'd been caught in adultery, if you remember, he says, I don't judge you. I don't condemn you, but leave your sin. Okay, so he both shows her mercy and also speaks truth to her. Now, this is not what he says here. All I can see in what he says in his dialogue with her is mercy. Just love and compassion. And so, personally, I'm more convinced by the interpretation that this lady has lived a life of pain, rejection. The people that she's been committed to in marriage have either left her or have died. And I don't know whether that rings true with anyone else's story here. I wonder who here is sitting here and has experienced rejection? Who here has experienced pain and loss? Maybe that's been part of your narrative, part of your story. And perhaps you can put yourself in the position of this lady sitting there. And Jesus is coming and looking in your eyes and saying, you might feel like a nobody, but to me, you're somebody. Pain can prevent our potential. Pain wants to say no to us. It wants to stop us from stepping out again, because it's much easier not to step out and not to commit to anything, because then you're safer. You won't get rejected. You won't experience pain. In my family, we have experienced several deaths and bad news stories about health, the health of people that are close to us. And it's so easy to not step out and not invest in relationships with people, because then you don't set yourself up to be hurt. And that's such a temptation. The reality is that pain eventually will result in you feeling like a nobody. You'll just say no to everything. And Jesus says, I see you as a somebody. I have some amazing plans for you. I have something better for you than just saying no. So to God, a nobody is a somebody. The second thing I want to draw out of this story is that an encounter with Jesus is enough. You don't need to know lots to be used by God. The amount of times I've heard people say, I can't go and share my faith with someone because I don't know enough of the Bible, or I don't feel like I'm a good enough Christian. I don't pray enough. I don't feel confident enough in my relationship with God. And I want to say tonight, don't discredit yourself because of your lack of knowledge or because of how you feel in comparison to people you reckon are good Christians. The reality is we're all failures. We're all sinners. We all mess up. And it's not about how much you know, but it's about who you know. And that's a bit of a cliched saying, I know, but it really is true. And one encounter with Jesus is enough. And this lady, this woman, this Samaritan woman, if you read on later on into the story, after her encounter with Jesus, she goes back to her town and the whole town believes and comes to faith. She's had one encounter. She's met Jesus once and then a whole town comes to faith. One encounter is enough. It's all about relationship. It's not about rules. It's not about how much you know. In fact, this woman knew quite a lot and she had a lot of knowledge. And she says in verse 25, the woman said, I know the Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. She knows that there's a Messiah coming. It's not that she doesn't know anything. She's ignorant. She does know stuff. But what she'd lacked was the encounter with Jesus. And Jesus says, I who speak to you am he. I am the Messiah. So I wonder, have you had an encounter with Jesus? And if you can say yes, then you can bring a whole town to faith. One encounter is enough. And perhaps it's been a while. I don't know how long ago it was that you had an encounter with Jesus. My guess is you didn't sit at a well and have a long chat with Jesus. But encounters with Jesus can look different for each of us. It might be that you go on a long walk. And you're in the beauty of the countryside and you just sense God stirring you and inspiring you by what you see, and you sense his love for you. Or perhaps it might be in a time of worship, in a service, even in this service, who knows. But maybe you are just experiencing the love of God. An encounter with Jesus is enough. So my challenge to you is, are you responding to that encounter? And if you're sitting here thinking, I haven't really had an encounter, I kind of know about Jesus, but I don't feel like I know him. I know stuff, but I don't know Jesus. And I want to encourage you to seek him. The amazing thing about this story to me is that Jesus was waiting. He got there before the Samaritan woman. Jesus is waiting for you. He gets there before you. And for some of you, he'll have been waiting a long time. Remember, he's thirsty. He's waiting for you to come and help him, give him a drink. But he's waiting for you. And Jeremiah, there's a book in the Bible in the Old Testament, says this. When you come looking for me, you'll find me. Are you looking for him? I think this lady, this Samaritan woman, was a truth seeker. She was a seeker. She was seeking after the Messiah. She said, I know that one day the Messiah is going to come and he'll explain everything to us. She's waiting. She knows all about worship. She's inquisitive to know about this living water that Jesus offers her. She's a seeker. Are you a seeker? Because one encounter is enough. And I just want to end with the fact that as the woman leaves, she does something significant. So later on in verse 28, It says, then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who has told me everything I ever did. It's a little detail that I missed previously when I've read this story, but it's the bit that says she left her water jar. That's why she'd gone to the well in the first place. She'd gone there to get water and she'd left the jar behind. The reality is you become what you drink. Apparently, and I know there's some medical professionals in the room, so you might want to correct me on this, but apparently we are 60% of our body mass is water. Is that right? I'm looking for nods. Roughly around that. And that's why we need a drink so much when we get thirst, when we lose water, because we need to replenish that stock. We are what we drink. And this lady has been offered living water. Water that is not physical water. So she no longer needs that water jar as much as she thought she did. The water that she's been offered and she's been given in the encounter with Jesus is living water. It's water that is the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God that brings hope to all who she comes into contact with. It's eternal life. It's the presence of God going with her. And so I want to challenge you again. If you don't know him, if you've not had an encounter with him, seek after him. Seek him and he will be found. He's waiting for you. He's just waiting there. And you are what you drink, and he's offering living water tonight. And for some of you, maybe you just don't know that you have eternal life yet. And if you want to make that step and accept this living water, leave the jar behind. Leave that whatever you have brought into this room tonight that is saying, I rely on this for my life. Maybe it's a relationship with someone that you know is not going to satisfy you. Maybe it's a job that you know ultimately is fragile and you could lose it at any moment, or the business might go down the pan. Or maybe you're like me and you feel like you need other people's affirmation and encouragement for you to feel good about yourself. What is your water jar? What is it that you've brought into this room hoping, and it's like a comfort and you feel you need it? Jesus is saying, I've got living water for you. It'll never run dry. It'll never run out. It'll never fail you. And it will bring hope to all you encounter, anyone that you meet. And so let's just spend a couple of moments just praying and asking God what he wants to say to us. Jesus, I thank you that you are so radically empowering of people who feel that they have nothing worth offering. People who feel that they are not good enough. People who feel like they've failed. Lord, I thank you that you look us in the face and you say, you are somebody, you mean something, you're significant to me, and I have amazing plans for you. Lord, I pray that you would give us confidence in our encounter with you, that we'd seek after you. And Lord, I pray as we seek you that you would give us living water that doesn't run dry. That eternal life would just flow out of us wherever we go this week.